And we are back with the Wild Times episode number 38. Wild Times. What's up, guys?
Hello, friends.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Happy 2021. Welcome to the new year.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. The clock hit midnight. COVID went away. There's no more COVID. People are out in the streets.
It's amazing.
You know, things are festive. There's fireworks. Nope, that's not what happened. It was. I'm going to start this episode off with a rant because I kept hearing all this, on Instagram. So can't wait for 2021. Can't wait. 2021 is coming up. You know, it's like, shut up. Clock doesn't hit midnight and the world gets better. Like, we have to work at making the world a better place. And it hasn't happened yet. It's the second day. I don't know what's taking so long.
True. Yeah. Nothing's changed except that Christmas is over.
Right.
New Year's is over. And now we're in for a long winter's
with
night.
Nothing to look forward to at all.
God, you guys are real. Everybody, don't leave us just yet. We are fun and happy.
Let's get into it. So if you are joining us for the first time, ladies and gentlemen, brosners, if you will, this is the Wild Times podcast, a podcast primarily dedicated to good laughs, enjoyment, alcohol, and of course, news in the wildlife space. I'm your host, the broologist, Forrest Galante. Joined with me is the ever-handsome Ritep. How you doing, Ritep, the professor? He's got a headband today and a little hair swoosh to the side going on. That's new.
That's strange. That looks very weird. Yeah.
It's different. How are you, Ritep?
I'm good. Freakish. It's 2021. I ate $18 worth of Taco Bell yesterday. The nacho fries are delicious. And I just got to say that every New Year's, once you're past the age of 21, is bullshit nonsense. Fuck everybody.
Yeah.
Happened to we're happy, nice people? Why are you yelling fuck everybody?
Fuck everybody.
I don't like you guys trampling on my forte. I'm the ranter.
Can I
you
before guys the before ones. I introduce Patrick for those who don't know him? Can I ask you one real personal question, Ritep?
Go.
What do you spend more on every single year, Taco Bell or plumbing bills?
They're correlated.
How long have you been coming up
There's
with that?
There's a causal relationship between those two.
I still haven't taken a number two. Will be a little less vulgar today, and I literally ate probably 3,500 calories worth of Taco Bell.
So you're telling me you haven't pooped this year.
This year.
He's not.
No. More on Taco Bell.
And the guy with the normal bowel movements in the lower right-hand corner of my screen, the bro-ducer, my longtime buddy, Mr. Patrick DeLuca. What's up, Papa P?
Hey, buddy. I have a problem this week for us and Peter. I've been taking a lot of shit on our YouTube about not knowing where to look, or I'm staring too intently at you guys. And so now I'm like, what am I supposed to do?
Is this real feedback we've been getting?
I'm getting hammered that I stare at you guys. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? Like,
where else are you supposed to look?
I don't know. I'm supposed to look all around. I don't know what to do. So if you're one of the people on YouTube who has a problem with my staring, could you please comment on where you'd like me to look moving forward?
You have a resting bitch face for a male. I always have.
And a lot of people have punched me in it in my younger life because they thought I was mean mugging them when I was just staring off into space thinking about leprechauns, man.
Well, your face looks beautiful today, except you're cutting off the top of your head, I think. If you angle your camera down just there, we go. Oh, yeah, we got the top of your head now.
I think he looks good. Yeah.
So look, we talk a lot of wildlife and forest. We've done this a couple times before where we had an animal mystery.
Yeah.
Peter, I'd like you to play too.
Okay.
I have a little bit of an animal mystery for you guys.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Cheers, man. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. So this is New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, this happens.
Wow. Fresh.
So it's nighttime. It's probably about 11 o'clock. And usually once it's that late, we'll just let the dog out into the front yard so she can take a pee, take a shit, whatever. She's very good. She just goes out into the bushed in area, comes back in. Insanely, Christina opens the door to let the dog out. I'm in the other room. And she, as soon as she opens, it's a big heavy wood door. I just hear coming.
Tasmanian devil.
Legit.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
Okay. That's not the answer.
It's good though. Good impression.
So I hear that noise. I come running to the door because I'm like, I don't know what just happened, okay? Mm-hmm. I see an animal, a predator, run down the street.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I then go, first I grabbed a club that I keep in my car. And I went towards the source of the sound, and it is my neighbor's dog has been severely injured in their yard, in their side yard. And it's all fenced in. It's, I don't know what kind of dog. It's not a Pomeranian. It's like maybe a 12, 15-pound dog.
Got it.
Okay.
What animal, you know where I live in L.A.?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Was in a very suburban, quiet neighborhood attacking dogs at 11 p.m. just 1 hour before the new year.
So let's break this down for a second. So you live on the outskirts of Los Angeles in the valley now, right? I haven't been to your new place. COVID's a bitch.
I know, right?
Yeah. You're in the valley. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, Peter, because you're going to say something outrageous, I'm just going to make this.
He's going to say octopus. Yes.
You are. You're going to say octopus. No. I'm going to make this more simple for you. Okay. Given the geographical range, the likely candidates are raccoon, possum.
That was going to be my first guess, by the way.
Raccoon?
Raccoons.
That was probably my first guess, too, because they are known to attack dogs. But raccoon, possum, coyote, bobcat, mountain lion, maybe fox. That's kind of it. We got those six to pick from. I can't think of much else. Maybe a really, no, not a dog that size. Yep, that's it.
All right.
I would say that it was a group, a gang, if you will, of raccoons. The Latin kings of raccoons or something.
That's a great look. That's a great guess because where I lived in West Hollywood, there was a gang of raccoons that lived in the sewer on my street, and they would come up from the sewer. And there was a crazy old woman that fed cats and eat the cat food, and then descend back into the sewer. It was not raccoons.
Raccoons. Okay. All right. All right.
Do you want me to just tell you? Is this painful for the listeners?
No, should I
just
tell you? I'm enjoying it.
All right. So Peter guessed raccoons. Forrest, what do you
got? So it's not a gaze of raccoons, which is the collective noun, by the way.
Thank you, bro. I'll just
learn something for sure. Never
heard. So that was also definitely my first guess. Can you give us like a little breadcrumb? Can you give us like a tidbit? Is there anything else that might narrow this down?
Well, that noise.
Now, you said it didn't die, right? You said the Pomeranian-ish dog is severely injured, correct?
Truthfully, haven't gotten an update because the owner did come out while I was outside, scooped it up, was freaked out, and took it in the house. Mm. And I didn't just like stand outside the house and wait. Like I figured she had it under control.
And what this means to me is the predator. And I'm trying to break this down.
I like
without
what
just
you're doing there.
You're
thinking.
Guess.
You're thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Yeah. The predator didn't run away with this prey item. So instantly, I'm eliminating mountain lion, bobcat, and coyote. Right, I'm taking those off. You also said it was fenced in, so that also takes away coyote, right? Because mountain lion, bobcat, easy over the fence. Coyote, not so much.
Okay. So that leaves.
And it's not a raccoon. So all that leaves is possum, and I said possibly fox. Possum's highly unlikely, so. Although kind of a rarity in Los Angeles, I'm going to guess fox.
It was indeed a fox.
Get out of here.
Here we are.
If you hadn't said raccoon, I would have said raccoon.
Yeah. Oh, it was a fucking fox, dude.
Nice guess.
I've never seen a fox in L.A., dude, and I swear to God, it was running down the street, trotting. You know, just trotting, very playful, kind of the way their arms go up.
Yep.
And just trotting down the street, and it was looking behind it at the source of the noise. I don't know what made it stop attacking, if it was that they heard that. I don't know what happened, because the owner wasn't outside yet when I got there.
Yeah.
So something spooked it off. I've never seen a fox in L.A., period.
So here's the thing. Gray fox, like we have in Southern California, their principal diet is rodents and rabbits, right? So if you're looking at a dog like my mom has this little Squeaks dog. You guys have seen it, that little tiny poodle dog, right?
Yeah.
It weighs like 3 pounds. Perfect fox prey, right? It's like the size of a small spring hare, like the size of a small cottontail rabbit. Absolutely perfect fox prey. I'm guessing that you said this dog was like 15 pounds?
No, I would say your mom's are like the small. Are those dogs that your mom has?
No, it's a hamster. I call it a hamster.
Yeah, they're so small.
I know.
No, it was, I think it might have actually been a Pomeranian. It was probably like an 8-pound dog. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like the size of, you know, a small jackrabbit, which is totally on the menu for a big gray fox. So, yeah, I mean.
Crazy, though. I just Googled gray fox now that you told me what kind of fox it was. Although they're 2 feet long, they only typically weigh about 8.5 pounds.
Yeah.
So they're not, it wasn't that much bigger than the dog, period.
No, they're just incredible predators. You know, like, you just, this is a bad example because they're not even that closely related, but just take a wolf and shrink it down, right? Like, a wolf can take on a moose much larger than its own size. Fox is the same. Like, they're just wonderful predators. In fact, Will, if you can pull up a picture of a fox mouth to show what one looks like, their canines, their fangs, their jaw structure, I mean, they're incredible, efficient killers.
Oh,
yeah, look
whoa.
At that little guy.
And, wow, you know, look at those teeth.
Those,
dude,
they're
for those
serious.
Only listening, where we also have a YouTube, come to the YouTube, we pull up pictures. That is crazy. Describe what you're seeing there. I've never seen a jaw
teeth.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very sharp. I'm not sure the exact number. I mean, they are very, very sharp. They're very, you know, they look like a more aggressive dog's mouth, really. They're more pointed. They're more angular. Their jaws are very narrow, which makes them very efficient when it comes to, like, chomping down on the neck region for killing prey. And, you know, whether or not the gray fox that encountered your neighbor's Pomeranian was trying to attack it to eat it or it just got startled and cornered by it, it's hard to say. But either way, I mean, that's you know, that's a fair fight. An 8-pound Pomeranian versus an 8-pound fox. Like, that's, you know, that's two carnivores going at it. And the wild fox over the pampered LA pooch probably takes it.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Every time, most likely.
Interestingly, so fox, I was just Googling fox facts about gray fox. They have 42 teeth that are perfectly designed, as they said. I'm not going to get into the tech of it, but to grab throats based on the positioning. And they also, their maximum speed, 42 miles an hour. So
that's
they like
fast.
The number 42.
That's really fast. Do you know what? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Ritap.
So I mean, this is a pretty, the Pomeranian, this doesn't look like a very big animal. This seems almost like a, like you said, like a fair-ish fight size-wise. Why would this animal do that? Because it's very hungry or because it's just pissed off?
Like I said, you really, without seeing the interaction, it's hard to know. I mean, my guess would be the fox was likely in the little pooch's yard and it kind of cornered it and then it became a fight versus the fox was hunting
maybe.
It. Because a gray fox in LA, it's probably not hunting jackrabbits, right? It's probably primarily hunting rats, mice, things like that. This fox probably, I get fox here in my yard every now and then. They probably hopped over the fence, was looking for a mouse or a rodent or something. This little cheeky, white, fluffy thing came running out and yapping at it. And, you know, it felt threatened. It had its back against the fence and went forward. And, yeah, 8 pounds versus 8 pounds, you know?
Yeah. And who hasn't wanted to just bite a little 8-pound dog that was barking in their face? You know what I mean?
While we speak on this, just because it's kind of fun and we're looking at this thing's incredible mouth, do you guys have any idea what the mammal with the most teeth in the world is?
It's got to be a blue whale. Blue whale's the loudest. It's the biggest.
I think they don't have teeth. I think they have baleen.
Correct.
Let me guess. It's going to be a trick question here. Oh, you know what I think it is? I think it's a silverback gorilla.
Interesting.
Really?
Nope. What if would you be able to guess it if I narrowed it down to something that could also be in your backyard?
Also in the backyard. Possum? No.
Correct.
No way.
Yep.
Possum?
Yep. Possums have the most teeth. I think it's like, Patrick, you're the Googler, like 196 or something, 190. They just have an insane amount of teeth.
I mean, yeah, it's absolutely disgusting when a possum opens its mouth at you and hisses at you.
That's a lot of teeth in there.
Which we've all had, I'm sure. They are heinous. I love possums. They're super fun to watch, but they're very ominous when they hiss at you. They're scary as shit.
Patrick, do you remember that time we were in Louisiana looking for ivory bills? And I was in the lead car. Were you in my car or the car behind me?
The one behind it.
You were in the car behind. Yeah. And what happened? Yeah. We're cruising down the dirt road at like 30 miles an hour.
It was literally like 4 or 5 a.m., like an 18, 19-hour day. We're driving through this marshy territory. He's in the truck in front of me, and all of a sudden I just see it slam its brakes on, and he just darts into the woods. I'm like, oh, God. Yeah. Comes out with a possum.
Came out with a possum. Ran across the road, and I was like, huh. There you go. Look at that. Look at that gnarly mouth.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, encounter that in the wild, dude, I'd probably pee my pants.
Well, that's what I was talking about in Louisiana. So I saw this eye shine because I was shining out the side of the window and didn't know what it was. And it was off the ground. So, you know, I was like, oh, it could be the animal we're looking for. Darted into the woods, and it was this possum that took off kind of running, and I just caught up to it and grabbed it and brought it out. I was like, look, guys, a possum. Patrick's like, put down the possum. We're going back to the hotel.
How do you handle a possum? I mean, would it bite you?
Like, oh, yeah.
It was trying desperately to bite his face and dick off.
So what do you got it? Like, by behind the neck or something like that?
By the tail. By the tail.
Oh, by the tail. Okay.
I had him, he was hanging onto a stick, and I had him up on the tail, and I was just kind of like, look, a possum, shoving it in Patrick's face. And he was like, yeah, great. Put it
well,
down.
It's funny, because it's pitch black. And so as the producer who, a portion of my job is to try to get none of the camera guys killed or injured severely. Yeah. And one thing that I've learned through making TV shows that I would have never thought of is so many injuries when you're filming in the woods are sticks in the eye.
For sure.
Remember Backer got the stick in the eye?
Yep,
and,
for sure.
Where was that, Java?
I think so, yeah. I can't remember anymore.
It happens
a lot. Yeah.
Camera guys get sticks in the eyes. And so Forrest is going after this thing that he's seen, and the camera guys are, you know, 5 seconds behind him, jumping out of their cars, and they're just crashing through branches and sticks. And I'm just hearing snap, ah, snap, oh shit, snap, oh fuck. And I'm like, someone's probably lost an eye. And then he just comes out with a possum. He's like, can we film a little segment? So sure, we can show the possum. It was actually cool. It was cool.
Let me get the eye patches out.
Yeah,
So that was a good time. That was all lots of fun.
Before we derail it too much, because I know what Peter's gonna say when we ask him what came across his elegant new marble slab of a desk. Forrest, what came across your clear acrylic, very tacky desk this week?
That's right. There's a couple interesting things. I think one thing that I loved, it's not even news, but one thing that I absolutely loved that I saw, a Brosner sent it to me, is a bunch of guys skating up in Canada, right? So, of course, they're skating on a pond. It's frozen, a pund maybe, because they're Canadian.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Yeah, and sure enough, they're like checking with their axe or whatever how hard the ice is. And, Will, if you can find this video and pull it up, and they find a moose stuck in the ice. Now, this is not like what we talked about last week. Here we go. We could watch the video. In fact, let's watch a video. Nice. I'm not even going to talk. I'll explain what we're seeing as we go for those listening.
I'm dying to know if the moose was alive.
Yeah. So, Will, go ahead and hit play.
Let's narrate what we're seeing, since
of course,
most people
yeah,
only listen.
Of course. And if you're listening and you want to see this, come check it out on YouTube. But here's this guy. He's got this, like, stick. And he's hitting the ice. He's on skates. Oh. He's on a pond. He's in Canada. And in the distance, you see some thrashing, right? Something has fallen through the ice. Well, this guy skates right up to it, and it's a moose frantically trying to get out of where he's fallen through the ice. And the best part of this video, if you listen to the audio, we're not going to play it on the podcast. These guys in their really heavy Canadian accent say, oh, no, it's a moose. And, you know, they're like, what are we going to do? And this guy just starts, one guy's filming with his iPhone, and the other guy starts hacking a trail from the shore to where the moose is.
Brilliant.
It's brilliant. And now these guys are like, how are we going to get this moose out? And the moose is super tired.
He's gassed.
Guy who's got his poke and stick is like, come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. And then they're like, you know what? We got to cut it even more. We got to make him a full-on runway. So the guys go back around, start hacking up the ice. From the light change, it looks like this took a couple hours. And then they go around to the deep water side and shoo the moose right out. And you could see he's exhausted. Look, they're even giving him like a little nudge to help him out
of the
ice.
They're trying to pull the moose out. Yeah.
And here he goes up on shore.
And there he comes. Oh, yeah.
It's a young moose.
Love it.
Exhausted, too.
Exhausted.
Oh,
but he made
it.
Like, look at that. Up on shore, on all legs. Absolutely exhausted.
Got up.
Yep.
And moose looks like it was just born. He's doing that thing where they come
out. Like a newborn giraffe.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And the legs are all shaky. But you know what I loved about this? You know, other than the Good Samaritans and the moose surviving and everything else and the tremendous Canadian accents, was just, you know, last week we talked about the woolly rhino discovery, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about it being stuck in the ice and, you know, how 15,000 years later we found this perfect specimen. This is how it happened, right? You're looking at how it happened. You're looking at a moose stuck in the ice, right? If these guys hadn't skated up, this moose would have been frozen whole in this Arctic water. And, you know, this is where people live. So next year it would have thawed out. But you can imagine 15,000 years ago, or if some little ice age hit, it would stay frozen, perfectly preserved for 15,000 years. So it's exactly what we talked about last week with the woolly rhino discovery, except you know you're seeing it in real time, so you can conceptualize and understand
exactly how
that
it
animal
could happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
I don't remember if we talked about it last week, but I was reading a bit more into that story, and I read a fact that said that most of the specimens that they find like that are frozen or in mm-hmm. tar pits or whatever like that, it's almost always males because they're idiots and
oh,
they
yeah.
like
yep.
do dumb shit and they like go around and fall in things. And I just thought that was funny because I'm like,
it's what we've talked about so many times. It's testosterone brain, right? You're a young uh-huh. male and you're like, oh, I'm just going to go, you know, across this pond to impress this girl. I'm not going to take the long way around. And then you
right.
die.
So let me ask you this. Yep. What temperature would you assume that cold water was underneath that frozen lake?
Just slightly above freezing, right? Because it's fresh water, so it
sure.
has to be above freezing. There's
so
ice on the surface.
33, 34
at the most. Very
cold. So even a newborn moose calf mm-hmm. doesn't start to display signs that they're cold until it's negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, I
so
think
that
was
moose
yeah.
was for sure just probably walked out of there and was fine.
Now, right. don't get me wrong. You know, it's like if you sit in a hot tub for long enough, you can
sure.
get hypothermia, right? So he would have died and, you know, definitely exhausted. But if you're asking me whether or not that animal likely lived, no doubt it lived. You know, might
yeah.
have been killed
yeah.
the next day by a wolf, but it lived from that ordeal.
It was like the cold yeah. basically didn't affect it. It was just tired from
exhaustion,
thrashing
yeah.
around like that,
yeah.
you know?
But isn't that neat? Yeah, like
it is
couple
cool.
skaters, couple Canadian guys just being like, I'm going to hack this ice up and let this thing out of here. I don't know. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I mean, theoretically
sure.
risking their own lives walking out on the thin part of the ice.
For sure.
And who knows if that moose was going to be confused and charge them or whatever.
By
after,
the way,
too.
If you fall in that situation with that moose, you're done. Like, there's no surviving that. A frantic
yeah.
moose in a small little ice puddle like that, you know, we've been over this. Like, they weigh so, I can't remember what they weigh. They're huge, you know, they can be aggressive. Like, they did. They totally risked their own lives to get it out, and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Also, just
love
a quick
it.
Interesting
a
moose tidbit.
Too.
They start to pant to cool themselves off
uh-huh.
when temperatures go above 23 degrees Fahrenheit. So, like, it's 23. We're complaining. The tips of my fingers are yellow. I'm worried
right.
about losing a toe. And
it's
a moose is like... Yeah, this is brutal. It's too hot.
Oh, man.
All right,
very
should we give
strange.
Ritep his time here? Because we
Let's
know he's
it.
Got some big stuff.
I love that you're giving me my time, even though you're the one that brought this to my attention.
Yeah.
Let's hear about it.
Because I knew you'd love
but
it.
But it is in my wheelhouse because it's about aliens.
So I saw the headline. I know what you're about to intro. I haven't read a single word of it. Let's tell everybody what you're so excited about,
okay.
Ritep.
Okay, so the headline reads... A Harvard professor says an alien visited in 2017 and that more are coming. So that's obviously a shocking headline. And then,
sure
and it's, you know, a Harvard professor. Pat, you went to Harvard, right? I mean, it's a very prestigious
Close.
School. And so you're like, oh, this is definitely, definitely legit. And then you realize it's on nypost.com and you start reading some more.
But they
it
still
is
have
interesting.
Quotes. You know, it's still
no,
attributed to this guy, yeah.
No, but so it's super interesting. It's not that aliens have visited. There was a piece, they saw something on that telescope that that observatory they have in Maui, like the biggest one that we have in the world. And it was basically like a cigar-shaped, what they thought was just some kind of like meteor or something like that. Most
asteroid.
Scientists thought. An asteroid, yeah. And this guy... looked more into it and did some basically calculations and other things and came up with a hypothesis that this was no asteroid. This was likely a piece of space junk from an alien race.
Why?
And,
what made him hypothesize that?
Well, so basically it had something to do with the way that it acted different than any other piece of asteroid or anything else would move through space. And normally it says when it gets pulled in by the sun's gravitational force, it gets spit out really fast and it gets pushed away. This didn't take that trajectory and it didn't move as fast and it moved slower. And he was talking about you know, some other some other thing that they had observed that it was a similar behavior.
I was going to get into that. It was super, super, super reflective. So it was 10 times, it reflected 10 times more light than a typical asteroid, which is made of a lot of iron and, you know, other stuff, you know, other metals.
It was ultra reflective, and it really had its own power source
based on how it was moving.
Oh, okay, then, so there's a power, that's what they're saying, it was a power source. So is that how we know that it isn't our own space junk? It's my understanding, one of my best friends, Ricardo, who was on the pod a few episodes ago, he works in satellites, right? He's very, very advanced in that field. And he was telling me there is tons of man-made space junk up there, to the point that, like, you have to be careful when you put a new satellite up, because, you know, you can put $20 million, $100 million, whatever, into putting a satellite up, and then some bit of, you know, space debris can come by and just rip it to shreds in, like, 10 minutes. There's that much stuff up there if you don't know where you're going.
Well, so they know that it's not ours because it came from 25 light years away. They know where it came from. They tracked it for a good while.
Okay.
Because it was interesting, you know?
Yeah,
and
sure.
There was another... He explains how... Sometimes on asteroids, there'll be gas trapped inside of ice on the rock. And then when it comes close to the sun and it warms up, that can come out and basically propel it and also be an explanation for this type of behavior. But normally they can see that with the infrared, the way that they're looking at it through the telescope. And this didn't have any of those characteristics either.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, this guy, I mean, he's a smart guy, and he's saying that this is from an alien race and that there's going to be more.
It is fascinating. You know, it's like when you read these things, you're like, sure, you know, Billy Bob says there's an alien. But when it's a reputable source, right, like a Harvard professor, mm-hmm, I don't, you know, none of us need convincing that aliens are real, right? Like, there's not one of the three of us that doesn't believe that they're are other life forms in the universe. I mean, I think we all have different theories based on, you know, I think they're probably simple, you know, animal-like creatures, and I think some mm-hmm people think that they're incredibly technologically advanced beings. So,
Some people
being you, Ritep, yes.
What about Joe Rogan? Come on.
I thought you just thought that that they were octopus. I didn't think that you were
understanding. Well, the ocean aliens, my friend.
Well, that brings me to a little game I want to play here.
Okay.
Ooh.
All right, so here's the game. It's not really a game. You just have to pick one or the other. So okay. I got to thinking about this. So this professor, by the way, he's the chairman of the astronomy department at Harvard. So mm-hmm he's not like some dumb, silly fuck.
he wasn't the global studies professor or the dance major professor who says aliens are real.
Yeah, exactly. Avi Loeb, now, granted, in all fairness, it's in a book that's coming up.
Yeah.
So. You know, people like selling
good
books.
Promo.
Sure.
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 But anyway, okay. So I started looking into we've talked about this a little bit, but there's two sort of reasonably scientific papers by real universities that theorize two different things that are on Earth now may actually be aliens. Okay. And I'm going to give you the two, and I'm going to let you choose which one, because it has to be one of the two. It has to be an alien.
Okay.
Okay.
So one theory is that our friends that we talk about, the cephalopods, including octopus and cuttlefish, are aliens because they have 33,000 more proteins in their genome mm-hmm than anything else on Earth. They have mm-hmm just all these magical powers. We've talked about them all the time.
We've talked about them being aliens before.
Yeah. So the idea, I think, that this paper theorized was that they may have come over in frozen water on a comet mm-hmm as eggs, and then the octopus or cuttlefish, whatever, may have evolved from whatever that original little egg was.
Right.
Okay.
The other one,
I'm familiar with that theory.
Okay. The other one is the fact that mushrooms.
I'm very well versed
are
on
from
that
outer
theory.
Space.
Yeah.
Okay.
okay.
Which is super interesting, and I found the shortest article I could, and it's still very dense. But I can sum some of that up.
I know quite a lot about that. Well, look, you guys all know how much I love foraging and you know, mushrooms and mycology in general.
Yeah. You're the mushroom guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're fascinating. They're delicious. I literally just had some for dinner, so that I picked.
Nice.
But to sum it up, I think what is so interesting about mushrooms is You know, living spores have been found and collected in every level of Earth's atmosphere, right? From right here on the ground, way up in the sky, you name it, spores have been found. But
that's interesting.
Where it becomes like maybe they're alien. One is like they don't belong to any group, right? We call them fungus, but they don't belong to, you know, they're not a vegetable. It's not a fiber. It's not a protein. You know, it doesn't belong to any group. So it stands alone as a fungus. The spores of a mushroom, which for those that don't know what a spore of a mushroom is, it's kind of like a powdered seed, if you will. Those caps of the mushroom that you see, under those caps, they release these microscopic spores that go into the atmosphere in order to colonize new areas. But those spores are electron dense, okay? Meaning, we'll circle back to that. They're electron dense, and more importantly, they can survive in the vacuum of space. They're the only thing that we know of, basically, that comes from Earth that can generate life that can survive in the vacuum of space. You can literally take those spores, put them up above Earth's atmosphere, bring them back, they land on the ground, new mushrooms grow. Additionally, outer layer is actually metallic and like purple, which is a color combo that naturally allows the spore to deflect ultraviolet light. So in other words, if these spores get into the vacuum of space and get too close to the sun, they can get fried by heat, in which case they have to be really close. But if they pass too close to the sun, their metallic exterior, their outer layer, will deflect the ultraviolet light to keep them alive. And if all of this wasn't unique enough, that outer shell that I speak of the spore, is the hardest organic compound that exists in nature. So it's like, you know, the size of it is hard to understand, but it's that outer shell of the spore is harder than ivory. It's harder than any animal's bone. It's harder than any redwood tree. It's the hardest organic compound that exists in nature, period. So you've got these little microscopic seeds, if you will, that can float up into space, deflect sunlight without damaging them, have this incredibly hard exterior. So say they impacted something, it wouldn't damage them at all. And so the theory, and it's one that I love, not that I necessarily believe it, but I think is super fascinating, is that mushrooms could have come from another planet because they could survive for thousands of years drifting in outer space before entering into Earth's atmosphere and then, you know, landing on the ground and creating these colonies and fruiting as mushrooms as we know it.
Well, and let's dive a little deeper here. And one species of mushrooms legit makes you have out-of-body experiences where you traverse the universe outside of your mind.
And psilocybins. More than one. Yeah, but psilocybins.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, and they grow in shit. I mean, they grow in waste. Like, so it's true. I mean,
that makes them aliens.
I'm just saying, they can survive and just on the waste of other, you know, creatures or whatever, you know? So, fascinating.
So, sorry,
shit.
I derailed your game, Patrick, but the game is pick which one could be from an alien planet.
Well, I don't think we have to pick anymore. Okay. I'm going octopus. Fuck off, Forrest.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you had that really interesting, we talked about it before, but a long time ago, but the that theory about how mushrooms can, or they potentially communicate via vast underground networks, almost like a brain.
They're the neural network.
It's not just a theory. Yeah. That's proven. That's proven stuff. Yeah. And it's emerging science in a lot of ways.
Totally.
I know Forrest knows a lot about it. I just worked on a documentary for National Geographic, and we met up with some professors in Louisiana who are studying that. God damn it.
Oh, wow.
What is the name of that process, Forrest? It's a certain type of bacteria.
The mycelium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A certain type of bacteria that allows basically tree roots that are all interconnected. Mm-hmm. Only when this bacteria is this fungus is present. Mm-hmm. Another mushroom, theoretically, right? Or it's a fungus.
Another alien.
Same thing, yeah.
When this fungal network is present on the roots, it allows them to communicate in fucking crazy ways. Have I talked about this on the podcast?
I don't think so. We addressed this once, but let's get into it. So let me paint a little bit of a picture, and then I want you to explain it further.
I just have two examples that I'm fascinated by. You can explain how it actually works.
Well, I'll just explain. So a mushroom... The thing that you see when you see a mushroom growing out of the ground is the fruit. Mm-hmm. It's like the apple on a tree. Below the ground, you have this massive organism, right? And this organism lives in symbiosis with tree roots. It needs tree roots in order to live. That's what it feeds off of. It gets its organic nutrients through those tree roots. And that organism is called the mycelium. And it grows on all these tree roots, and the tree roots grow and so on and so forth, so it expands. So every bit of earth you're walking on basically has mycelium, this mushroom organism living underneath it. And there's many, many different species, of course, right? Like porcinis and chanterelles and button mushrooms and so on and so forth. But they're mm-hmm. more or less all interconnected through tree roots. So if you can conceptualize that, now, Patrick, please explain, you know, what you were going to say.
Well, so basically the idea is they call them like mycorrhizal networks, which I'm sure mm-hmm. is just a network of the mycelium, whatever. But so they're studying how it's working in the Louisiana bayou, because, you know, the bayou has been so decimated and it's causing hurricanes to be worse for New
Orleans.
Losing
land every year, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. Yeah.
So, but two stories that I think illustrate this that are really cool. So in tree root systems where the roots are interconnected and they have this mycorrhizal fungus on it, right, they found that there can be like something called a mother tree. Right. So if a tree, let's say one tree is just in a situation where it's not getting a lot of sunlight, it's not doing very well. These mother trees that are like the biggest, tallest tree will actually send nutrients through the network to a tree that's a fucking mile away.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
crazy.
Provide it with nutrients to keep it alive.
Dude, that's so how does it? So it basically
communicating.
Sends its nutrients
we don't
down
know
through,
is the answer. Right, we don't know why they do it or how they know or why one tree tells another tree that it's in trouble or isn't in trouble. We don't understand any of that. All we know is the only way they're interconnected is through mm-hmm. the soil and through the mycelium.
Now get this. This gets weirder. This is a fucking weirder one, right? So there's some areas in Africa where they have figured out. So giraffes will come by, or giraffes, so Forrest knows what I'm talking about. They'll come by and they'll start eating, you know, they'll be eating all the leaves, right? They're eating shit. they're taking away, you know, it gives more surface area for the sunlight. It's damaging to the tree. A certain type of tree, and I can't remember which one.
Acacia.
The acacia tree will start to produce a toxin once the giraffes are eating it, and it'll make the leaves taste bad. Right, mm-hmm. so that the giraffes will eventually stop eating it. Obviously, this has evolved over many, many years, at least 10. right? So what they've found is that in situations where the acacia trees have these mycorrhizal networks, giraffes are over here eating fucking this tree, and it will fucking start telling the other trees, hey, giraffes are eating me. And trees where the giraffes haven't even gotten there yet, half a mile away, will start producing the toxin in advance.
Correct.
So once the giraffes get there, they're just like, oop, bite, gross, next.
Yeah, move on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's nuts, dude. That's like an internet.
It's tree communication, and we don't understand it.
No, I mean, dude, it's just like what you guys had mentioned a bit the other day on the last podcast about, it was in the recap of 2020. We started talking about for a minute just like quantum entanglement just for a second. Like just the fact that there's these things out there that we have no clue how they work still. I mean, we're just starting. Are they even like, I mean, Pat, you said they're researching that now. They've not researched this before. Is it just off the radar entirely, basically, because it's not that important? Or what's the deal with that?
I don't think it's that new. The people that we were working with, the scientists, were at Tulane University, and they're studying it specifically in the bayou, but it's pretty incredible. I mean, like, this all aired on the show, but, you know, the main researcher we're working with is like, this is super new. Like, we understand that we can test for this, I guess, mycelium or these mycorrhizal networks.
The mycorrhizal network is just all the mycelium interconnected.
They can test, they can see that it's there, they can see the effects, but the specifics of how information is being transferred.
No idea.
Between tree A and tree B a half mile away?
Yeah.
No idea. No fucking clue, man.
Or why that information is positive versus negative. Like why one is saying, give me nutrients, and one is saying, I'll send you nutrients. Or why one is saying, I'm being eaten, produce toxin. Like we have no idea, right? And it goes back to that thing that I'm always harping on, which is like the world is so much bigger than we understand. It's like there's so much more than we can even conceptualize. All the fucking trees are talking to each other. You know, it's like...
right? With specifics. It's not just like one message.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, giraffe, I'm pretty thirsty. Like, there's actual shit being beamed around under the ground by trees, which we don't even think can think or talk or anything. That it should be the biggest news story ever in the history of the world. That's the only thing anyone should think about right now. That's mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. No one cares. I'm on your team. I agree.
I'm with you, too, man. I mean, it's one of those things, though, that people just... It's just not on the radar, man. I've never even heard of it, but it is. It's so fascinating. And like you, I didn't even think about that for us too. The negative versus the positive. Why aren't they sending bad signals as to like in to compete with them to try and become better or more, you know, outdo them or something, you know?
Right.
They're like cooperating instead of competing.
It's,
which is also interesting.
I'm telling you, man, we're going to look back, you know, whatever, just like we do now. Like we look back socially, we look back politically, we look back, you know, economically, everything, you know, in the wildlife space. We look back 10 years, 20 years, 100 years. We're like, Jesus Christ, we were stupid. Like, how did we allow ourselves to do these things? Like, how did we allow the dodo bird and the thylacine to go extinct? You know, how did we, you know, allow the economic recessions to take place? Blah, blah, blah. We're going to be looking back at this time period 100 years from now, assuming humans are still here, which is pretty unlikely. but we're going to be looking back at this time period going, we had all this technology. How are we so fucking stupid? Like, how are we still burning all these fossil fuels, killing ourselves, poisoning the planet, not understanding how trees talk? Like, we're idiots. Like, we had the internet and all we did was look at fucking YouTube all day long. Like, we're so dumb. Yes.
I mean, it's pretty funny when you think about it. When I was a kid, I mean... You can look at us. You know about how old we are. We're not super old people. I took flights where everyone was chain smoking on the flight inside an airplane.
I remember that.
I'm not even that old, man.
I remember that. I'm younger than you, and I remember that. So you're full of shit.
Well, I didn't go on a plane until I was 18, so fair enough.
By the way, we also, the food pyramid that I learned when I was a kid in Oswego, New York, the bottom of the food pyramid said you should eat 8 to 11 servings of fucking bread every day.
Do you remember that? Dude, yeah. Bread was like a big thing. Yeah.
And fat was terrible. Yet every professional athlete in the world now is on a high fat diet and a low carb diet.
Right.
Because it's probably better for you.
And that's just like 20 years advancement, man. It's it has a lot to do with who's funding what at the end of the day in today's society. There's a theory, but this came out in news. This guy said that, pretty smart guy, like this guy from Harvard, that aliens have quarantined our planet because we're so fucking stupid and we'll just destroy ourselves and everything. So we're in this.
We're basically
quarantined from all the other aliens. That's true. That's a fact.
We'll definitely Easter Island ourselves. I have no doubt about that. And thankfully, there are a few of us fighting against that to slow it down at least.
Let me just real quick before we get into more wildlife stuff. This is all touching on wildlife stuff, actually.
Yeah, we're good.
This is all nature. We're good.
Man. Come on.
So let me throw this out to you for us. Because when I started getting into this mycorrhizal shit, right, I started going deep on it, right? And I started thinking about all the stuff, and we talked about it on the last podcast about electroreception and maybe whether humans could have it. And you talked about someone walks into a room and you go, someone looking at me, and you turn, and a lot of times they are. Obviously, the pessimistic view of all this is that, no, it's just a coincidence.
I think that's the closed-minded view, but yeah.
Okay. That's what, because, you know, you say, okay, more often than not, if I feel like if I dream about someone I haven't heard from in a long time, or something like that, they'll call me that day.
Right.
You know, like those things happen.
There's something there.
This is quantum entanglement here.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, like, what's a biologist? Like, as a biologist who obviously believes, you know, very much in the corporeal form of things, like, what's your take on that? Could it be that we're connected by these quantum fucking, these tiny little spider webs that connect us to everyone we've ever met? Like, do you think there's hope that there is something like that that could be discovered?
Look, I am a scientist through and through, right? Like, I've dedicated my life to conservation and wildlife sciences. Like, to sit here and say, oh, man, there's chakras out there. We're all fucking connected. Like, how do you not get it? Would be, one, career suicide, and two, absolutely ridiculous. And yet, I'm, like, halfway there. You know what I mean? It's like I'm not looking at Peter's purple aura and going, he's getting sick in 10 years because I don't you know, that's just his bad lighting. But what I am what I do believe is what you basically just said, which is that there is a lot. It's not that there's all these energies and you know, crystals are going to fucking stick a crystal up your ass and you're going to heal and all that shit. And I don't believe in any of that garbage. Like, none of it. You know, I don't pray to the full moon. Just stop it. You know, just stop it. Like, get your head out of Lululemon and think a little bit, you know?
Sure.
What I do believe is that we have such a superficial understanding of how the world works. And what I'll try and explain is, we have spent so much time, as far as human history goes, attempting to catalog and categorize that we have spent almost no time attempting to understand. And so as science progresses, we're like, hey, you know, like, okay, now we know there's 166 species of shark in the world or whatever. I think it's 400 something, whatever. You know, there's this many of this type of animal. Well, maybe now we can go and look at what they do. Now we can learn about what their relationship is to each other. Now we can start to dig into their senses. And, you know, when you think about the millions and millions of species on the planet, and you realize all we've ever tried to do is kind of write them down in a book and say what they look like, it's only now for the first time that we're starting to understand them and their relationship to one another, their ecology, and the world's relationship to you know, and everything within it. And the analogy that I always give is like, the world is like a giant game of Jenga, right? It's like that Jenga toy.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know, what we as human beings do is like you pull a block out and you're like, yeah, this is a great tower. Like, it's super stable. You know, this thing's never going to crash. And then you pull another block out and you're like, yeah, it's fine. You know, Jenga's easy. Fast forward 15 turns and you're like, holy shit, you know, if I pull three more blocks out, this whole thing's going to come crumbling down. And I think that we're pretty much at that point right now in the world where it's like we don't understand everything. Yet we're pulling Jenga pieces out. We're pulling out fossil fuels. We're heating up the globe. You know, we're eradicating species. We're adding invasive species. You know, we're pulling pieces out of this Jenga game. And if we don't, like, slow down, take a minute to understand this game, the whole thing's going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. So, you know, I'm obviously a devout conspiracy theorist. So a lot of this has to do with the categorizing and you know, basically just writing everything down and trying to make sense of everything. I mean, that's what we do as human beings. But it's almost like, so the scientific method, obviously, which you're super familiar with, is pretty much religion now. I mean, that's what science is. Science, for people who aren't religious, who believe in, like, that the Earth is 2,000 years old and shit, they believe in evolution. And that, like, you know, that this has been observed this way, and this hypothesis is proven for because they have reasons that are provable with science, right? And, like, the scientific method, so much of it is all about being repeatable, right?
Yep,
so everything's got to be able to be repeated. And it's almost like that draws so much focus into, like, research and everything that you're trying to basically just make something repeatable so that you can prove it and basically get funding to research it more or whatever, that all these other things that are out there that are not repeatable, again, I'll go to, like, quantum physics, which they're just starting to get into, and that's basically because it has to do with making money off technologies that can use it in computers and shit, you know, but it's like they're just getting it. Do you think that, like, is there a different way that they should be focusing on, or is the scientific method still the way?
I see what you're saying. It's like, is this idea that you have to be able to show repeatable results to have anything be considered scientifically viable?
I guess, yeah. I guess what I'm asking is that.
Sorry,
what,
I'm falling.
Yeah,
now.
You're about
like methodology. Like, is that methodology going
acceptable
to keep us from understanding everything that we might be able to?
Is it preventing us to move forward into these directions you're talking about?
That's a good question, right? The short answer is, I think it's the best system we currently have in place, because if you can go out and get results one time from one thing and say, this is science, you know, like, for instance, if you throw a tennis ball at a wall enough times, right, eventually it sticks, right? Hits a hole in the wall, goes through the wall, whatever, it sticks. If you happen to do that one time and it sticks in the wall, now you can say, you know, every time you throw a tennis ball at a wall, it sticks. You know what I mean? That's a sure. That's a pretty garbage analogy, but you get
but,
my
but
point.
I get,
like,
yeah, I get
you
it.
You know, like
yeah.
You get my point. So I think that the methodology of something being replicable is a good thing to have. That being said, there are always anomalies, right?
Right.
And that's
mm-hmm.
the thing that this doesn't account for. That's why you have giants and little people and white whales and melanistic cats and all these other things. These are anomalies, right? So it's really tough as a scientist to take both of those things into consideration, to take in like, okay, we have to stand right. by methodology, we have to replicate the results in order for it to be proven, but we have to also leave space for the fact that there are these anomalies, because you never know right. what those could be. Maybe mushrooms mm-hmm. and fucking octopus are from outer space, but you know, how are we going to prove that? By experimenting time and time again. If I take mushroom spores into space 1,000 times, they're always going to survive. Like, does that mean they're aliens? You know what I mean? Like, the anomaly could still be that they came here. We don't really right. know, and that's a very broad strokes way of looking at it. But it's just like it's the best that we know how to do at this point.
And it's been super beneficial. I mean, but you can't deny like. The things that right. have come out of this method of science.
Of
I mean,
course
that's why our life
diseases.
Expectancy is three times what they sure. were in Christopher Columbus's days.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But the thing that I hate, yeah. and I don't want to get on too big of a rant now.
No, that's what people listen for, Forrest. They don't want to hear a dry fucking science podcast, someone reading the news.
That's right. That's true.
They want to hear us screaming because we've had a drink.
Well, let me get impassioned for a second here. Because one of the things that we're seeing more and more, it's becoming super popular, especially here in the United States and a couple other countries that I won't necessarily name right now, is this science denialism, scientific denialism. And that fucking mm-hmm. pisses me off. The fact that sure. you can choose, like, I won't even mention who it is in my family, but everybody has that wacky aunt or uncle, right? Where you're like, sorry, you believe what? I got one of those, right? And that person literally said to me the other day during a heated argument how they're like, well, I don't believe that. I'm like, you can't not believe it. It's science. It's a proven thing. It's like saying, I don't believe the sun makes you warm when you go outside. It's like, you, right. just go outside, you know, like just sure. fucking look. This is proven science. And this is like this new trend, this scientific denialism, because we've lost all the faith in media because of all the fake news, and the reasons go on and on and on, right? And I can understand why people become skeptical, but this whole scientific denialism thing is fucking terrible. It's so damaging to my field and people that have dedicated their lives to certain areas and studies to then have like a group of people be like, nope, I don't believe that. Because they just made up their mind to believe something different without causation. And like that,
sure.
Boy, that makes my life tough.
I think there's a flip side to that, which is I think a lot of times, I agree with everything you said, A.
Sure, that's fine.
Right, but I also think that it works the other way, where you have a lot of scientists, so-called scientists, or people in that community who shit immediately upon. I've ranted about this a million times, but right. just this idea that if you go, okay, wait a minute, trees, I'm gonna bring it back.
Yeah.
Trees are telling each other, hey, there's giraffes.
Right.
Produce the shit taste on your
right.
leaves, right? Hey man, I need some water, dude. I need some chlorophyll, can you help me out? Right, trees are doing that. But yet, yeah. it's impossible that humans have a way of communicating when they're not in each other's presence, right?
Right. Mm.
That's an impossibility. A lot of scientists will tell you, yeah, when you have a dream about your aunt and then she calls you the next day, even though you haven't talked to her in 2 years, that's a coincidence, and you only notice it when it does happen right. versus when it doesn't happen, right?
Right.
That's
sure.
that's the pessimistic view. But at the same time, we have Wi-Fi that's beaming information around the world invisibly,
right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But yet we can't accept the possibility that we have some mechanism that will be discovered in 10,000 years, 500,000 years, a million years if we're still around, that allows us to have our own version of Wi-Fi. It's not a particle. Yeah. Wi-Fi is not a particle. I don't know what it is. What is it? Can you tell me, Forrest, what's Wi-Fi?
I have no idea. I have no idea what Wi-Fi is. I don't know how it works. I understand it. But I'm okay.
Yeah.
So I agree, and I agree with you as well. And that's this is the thing. For anybody that's listening to this podcast is like, I am a scientific denier. Science is an evolving understanding of the world. Evolving right. being the key word, right? Because what we know now might not be what we know in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, right? So you have to accept science for what it is, while still keeping an open mind to the possibility of change. And yeah. when it's something like humans communicating through electromagnetic energy, there's no science to say we can't do that. Do you know what I mean? There's just nothing been proven that we can at this point. You know, we don't know of an organ that receives that or transmits that. But there's no science to say we can't do that. It's more like when the science is black and white and people deny it that I think is just infuriating. Black and white being like, the Earth's warming up, global warming, like that argument, right? The whole scientific denialism on that. It's like, you don't have to believe that the world's going to end tomorrow. I don't. But the Earth is undeniably heating up, whether humans have caused it, whether, you know, this is a natural cycle. It doesn't matter why the reason. It's a black and white matter, and global warming is happening. And the science proves that, right? We've seen it before. We've seen it now. We can see it by measuring temperatures, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like things like that that I think are, it's like, just calm down. Like, let's look.
Right.
Well, this I mean, is, a lot of this is psychological, though, right? Because, you know, you guys are talking about confirmation bias on both ends of it, and that's the real root of it. I mean, when you have convinced yourself, not even if you convince yourself, you believe it. When somebody tells you you're wrong after that, you're just like, no, like you don't want to feel like an idiot. And then you just reinforce whatever your decision about that thing was before.
And that's a big
kind
problem,
of what it boils down to.
Sorry. A big problem, Ritep, is the way that information is then relayed, right? It's that arrogant, like, you're so stupid. You don't believe in this. Like, here's the science, you know, that is
the not being open-minded thing you just said. I mean, that's a big part of it. And with the misinformation culture, basically, that we live in now, man, I mean, when you look at politics today, it's literally it's insane. You can't, if you watch Fox News or CNN, you don't know, like, none of that is news
anymore.
Those
are not news. Those are entertainment networks.
Exactly.
And they're very entertaining.
There's the whole thing. They're just playing all these strategic games to basically sway your opinion, public opinion. And I mean, that's just the way it is. It's just a means to an end for them for their agenda or whatever. But they know how to play on human psychology. That's for sure.
But I think, Forrest, what you said is really fascinating because, yes, it's an evolving thing. And I think if every scientist and everyone who controlled the information that gets disseminated to the public about science had that same view, it'd be amazing.
Correct.
You know, what I've found is that it's people in your generation, the younger group that's coming up, that tends to have that idea more. And one thing I'd offer to the Brosners, because I know they like when we get fired up, because when we do the YouTube lives, when we interact with them, they're all fired up about shit, man. It's cool to get excited about how fucking amazing the world is.
Yep.
But I will offer this.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
If you can keep that sort of general worldview and that idea that we don't know everything and that just internalize it, I don't know everything, it is tremendously helpful in interpersonal relationships, specifically romantic relationships, man. Like, as I've gotten older and less stubborn and less like, I know the answer to this, this is how I am, this is what I... Like, that's what you do in your teens and your 20s, man. And then you start getting older and you go, shit, I have like... I'm a disaster. Like, the more you just accept that, like, what you thought was right maybe isn't, and you could learn, it's really just a good worldview, I think, in general, across everything. Everything you do at work, everything you believe about politics, about the world around you, about the person you're in love with. Like, the more that you just accept, like, I need to learn shit every day, your life just gets so much better.
100%. Yeah, it really does. I'll drink to that. Cheers to that. I completely agree with you on that.
But I mean, I'm not preaching. I'm a loser.
You are, but I agree with what you said.
You could also just, if you're lazy, you could just be like, hey, I don't want to fucking deal with the argument. Whatever, man. Fuck it. All right.
That's also fantastic advice for Tap.
Cheers, mates.
All right, cheers. So, Forrest, I did want to run one thing by you, if it's okay. Or did you have anything else that came across your brand new desk that you wanted to...
I had one pretty fun thing.
Yeah, go for it.
If my old buddy Joe Rogan hears about this, I'm sure we're going to be out toad hunting tomorrow. But Will, our producer Will, WT Willie, sent me an article to show that Colorado River toad, which are super common animals, like I've caught hundreds of them. They're also called Sonoran Desert toad. Like they're super duper common, has been found to be the only animalian source of DMT in the natural world. And apparently, smoking the toad has become a trendy means of having one of these psychedelic trips. What you do is you extract its from its venom sacs. You extract the venom, dry it out, and smoke it. And you're going, you know, you're going straight to a DMT trip, which is apparently 4 to 6 times stronger than like an ayahuasca trip. Yeah, there you go. There's a Colorado River toad. Super common. Like anybody that's been to the Grand Canyon and been out at night has probably seen one. Yeah, I don't. What is DMT? I don't know what DMT
so,
is.
I'll get into this because I'm good.
I know one guy who knows, and it's bottom left on my screen.
I was too afraid to do DMT. It's been offered to me after I watched that person smoke it twice in front of me and was talking to some lady that wasn't there and trying to go upstairs. I was just like, no, I'm good. I'm not going to smoke.
But what is it? So, I don't know what it is.
So DMT, I don't know the full name of it, but basically it is it's a chemical. They say that it's the same chemical that gets released in your brain right before you die. The thing that causes you, they say, to see the light and all the crazy hallucinogens you have. But it's a very, very powerful hallucinogenic, right? So it's like way more powerful than mushrooms or acid or anything. And when you smoke it, it's basically considered to be the most potent hallucinogenic basically on Earth. So when you smoke it, it's just like a 10, maybe 15 minute trip you get where essentially you go into another world completely. Like you don't even know where you are. There's a guy who wrote a book called The Spirit Molecule on it, I believe.
Yeah, there's a documentary too. I think it's on Netflix called The Spirit Molecule.
Yeah. It's about DMT.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And he studied this. He actually got, you know, granted to be able to do this by the government, shot him up with DMT, wrote about their experiences. They talk about elves. They talk about going through this thing called hyperspace. But it is interesting because they do talk about similar experiences, which is kind of one of the things that he discusses in his findings, which is different than other hallucinogens. Like, you know, everybody has their own experience on mushrooms, acid, but there seems to be some similarities on DMT. So they think there might actually be some other world that you go into that you're connecting with.
Part of what's interesting about DMT is that there are trace elements of DMT, dimethyltryptamine, in our blood and also in our urine, right? So every time you take a piss, there's a trace bit of DMT in it. But it's considered something that's really frustrating to scientists because they don't actually know what the function really is.
But it's something our body naturally produces. We're not getting that from an outside source.
But we don't, for whatever reason, process it or access it in the way that if you just concentrate it and smoke it, that you'll experience it, right? So we do have it in our bodies, but for whatever reason, we don't know why the fuck it's there. And it's I think it's in our spinal fluid as well. But I think they call it the spirit molecule because people that, I guess, have had near-death experiences say that when they then took DMT afterwards, that it was almost the exact same experience. And I have some friends that – I have this group of friends that all went to Florida State, and they're kind of into this shit. They live out at the beach.
Well, they went to Florida State, so
yes. Yeah. But they're kind of cool hippie. I like these guys. And there's a thing like when you smoke DMT that you see the entities – I don't know all the terminology, but this idea, like you'll go into this intense fucking trip for like 20 minutes, whatever. And then, you'll like see these people and have these like unbelievably real intense conversations that when you come back, it really happened. It's not like a dream or a fantasy. It's like it happened. And then you could go like a year, not smoke DMT, do it again. And you will be with the same group or the same people is one thing I've heard. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. I'm too scared to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And I'm a pussy ayahuasca. When it comes to those things. I'm terrified of those things.
Yeah.
Ayahuasca.
Tell me about ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca is basically, so there's an oral version of it. See, the thing about DMT is it doesn't pass the blood-brain barrier if you ingest it. So you can only smoke it. And then ayahuasca is very interesting because I think it's in Peru where it was discovered basically thousands of years ago. They've been using this in rituals, you know, shaman give it to people still now. And essentially it's supposed to be this cleansing. So anyways, you take basically the ayahuasca that comes out of this one plant and then you have to take another another thing that comes out of another plant. They mix it together. It's an MAO inhibitor, so that the
same
chemical DMT can pass the blood brain barrier through the you know, the intestines or whatever.
Okay.
Because the MAO inhibitor allows it to do that.
Okay.
So, but it's the same thing as DMT. It's not as intense as smoking it. You basically have, you know, from what I've watched, I've never taken it, but it's like a 4 or 6 hour trip, and it can be, it's super, super intense. Hmm. And people go to Peru and have these shamans give them, it's called medicine, and then they have these experiences where basically they face their demons. And so they try and, you know, if they're an addict, they basically go there and try and to get clean or whatever. They're trying to face their demons, and they do it through having this intense experience on this hallucinogenic. And a lot of people claim that it's cured them of mental illnesses, depression, you know, addiction, all kinds of things. And it's, and it can be a super, super scary, scary thing. And but it can be like great in the end. So they say if you take ayahuasca, you're supposed to have a shaman who knows what the fuck he's doing, so you don't.
I've also
freak out.
Heard. So two points on that. One is I've heard that as well. A good buddy of mine, he's one of the high ups at Black Rifle Coffee. He's an ex-military guy, ex-vet. He saw a lot of combat and, you know, kind of had some personal demons from that. He went down and did an ayahuasca ceremony and came back feeling kind of enlightened, I guess. Like, you know, had a lot of weight lifted off his shoulders. That was associated with trauma from, you know, his time served in the military. But I've also heard, and I don't know much about this, that it's become so trendy and popular with, you know, Florida State guys and fucking West Hollywood chicks and whatnot, that, like, yeah, it's just this big racket now, right? Like, some guy who lives in, you know, a normal high-rise in Iquitos, Peru, goes and puts on his fucking headdress and his hula skirt and goes and grabs his ayahuasca at, like, the local CVS, and then a bunch of Americans come down and he, you know, all of a sudden he's a holy man and, you know, he's guides you while you smoke it and puke your brains out. And, you know, and it's just like, it's become a bit of a racket for like rich white people to go to Peru and do like drug tourism, which I think is pretty funny if you think about it.
It is.
You're, well, like, you're having this enlightening experience and like going to Peru with this shaman. And then the guy goes back to his condo in Iquitos and watches satellite TV, you know, and you're like,
by the way, that's why I'm scared to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want that. Like, what, you know, I don't know what's, I've always been too scared to do it. My brothers asked me to go out there and like do it with them. And I'm like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
So just I'm scared enough just being in a foreign country, like in that scenario. Imagine taking some crazy ass, like acid, basically, or whatever.
I don't need to imagine it. I did it in the jungles of Colombia on national television, and it was terrifying. I puked my brains out.
One thing that's interesting that you might find fascinating, Forrest, is that so the way that it works, they believe, they don't know how it works or where it even comes from. They think it may come from the pineal gland,
okay,
which I believe is responsible for a lot of the hormones that control our like sleep cycles and things
melatonin
like that.
Melatonin comes out of there.
Okay,
I think.
But they don't know. The other thing is that that DMT binds to the sigma 1 receptor, which is, I guess, found all throughout the body in basically all of our cells, and that receptor is responsible for protecting cells from dying when oxygen is low. And that's one of the reasons that the anecdotal stories of people saying I had a near-death experience and it was very similar to a DMT trip, that scientists think that there could be something to that because it binds to the same receptor that keeps your cells from dying when your oxygen's depleted. So it's just a fucking fascinating thing, man, that we know so little about this, but that it can provide such a profound experience for people who are ballsy enough to try it.
That is the theme of the night, man. We don't know much. You know, we don't know much about DMT. We don't know much about octopus. We don't know much about aliens. We don't know much about mushrooms. We don't know much about how trees talk. God,
we're just
what
being
do we
humble.
Know?
I know everything about all
what
of these.
What do
things.
We know? We know nothing.
We know jack shit. But
it is exciting that these hallucinogens are being decriminalized now in lots of places. Like in Oakland, you can take mushrooms now and basically not get in any trouble. And there was, I think, Oregon maybe as well. You can now
Oregon.
Like,
Oregon passed a law that, like, I basically, if you have any drugs on you, it's only a $100 fine or something crazy like that. Did you see that?
I know where I'm moving. Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, even hard drugs and shit. Yeah,
I was like, it's just like a $100 fine. It's like just go nuts, but it's $100.
Wait, can I do one more news story before we get to the other
stuff?
Of course. So I just thought this one was hilarious. So we'll pull up the images for number 8. So a guy goes on a date, right? And his mm-hmm. picture and the picture of the woman that he's on the date with are in the news article. And okay. he was batting above his batting average.
Let's
for sure.
see, Will. Let's see what this guy looks like. Let's rip him down first.
He was Floyd Mayweather fighting Muhammad Ali. It was not.
Oh, wow.
He needed to do well on this date. Let me just say that. We've all been there.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, what do you do when you're on a date with someone who's better looking than you? You got
to
really impress them.
So
of course,
you're going to show him your pet
flowers, maybe.
You're going to show him your pet goldfish.
Oh,
to impress her. That's what he said he was doing.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
So he's like, "Hey, you want to come see my goldfish?" So he already had her back at his place, and rather than being like, "Should I pour us a very," he's actually quite handsome. Yeah. He's
but she's a treat. He's meh.
You know what?
I like them both. I think
I like him a lot. I would say like if I cared and I had like an ex and that was the new boyfriend, I'd be like, he's really fucking good looking. he's super cool looking.
I like them both, and I like that he took her to meet a goldfish. But I want to hear how the story
shakes. That's the best part about this guy.
Yeah. So he's like, "Hey, I know what to do. Instead of cracking open that bottle of wine I've been waiting on, I'm going to show her my goldfish."
No pun intended.
So he brings her in the other room where the goldfish lair is. As they walk into the room, a spider is crawling up the wall with the goldfish in its mouth.
What?
Yeah. And he quickly snapped a pic.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, my God.
If you're listening on iTunes, you should come check this out on YouTube. There's a picture of a big-ass wolf spider pulling up this, like, Aranda fancy goldfish up the side of a wall.
Oh, my God, this poor fish. Dude, what are the odds he walks in there? Is this real? I mean,
it's a good question.
This really happened? He snaps a pic of this? This just happens on his date? This sounds
dude,
like
I would snap a pic if that was happening. I would snap
now,
a pic.
100%, you do. Now, let me ask you this, though. At this point in the date, let's assume this is a first date. Things have been going very well until this point. Well enough to get this girl to your backyard to show her your goldfish. How do you play it? Right? I know how I play. Let's say he's got very limited emotional investment in the goldfish. So he's not like not actually distraught. How do you play it to still close on the date?
That's the first thing he did was pull out his camera and take a picture up close too. That's a close picture. So I love animals. I'm fucking trying to puck the fish. Is the fish dead, first of all? It looks dead, doesn't it?
It's probably dead at this point.
It appears to be.
If that's the case, I mean, just let them have its meal and have
it. You're not answering my question. I'm asking how you play the date.
You just "Oh, did I say goldfish? I meant spider, bitch." And then you go, "I meant bitch like the like other way. Like, I didn't mean it like the way that you think I meant it."
What do you think her reaction was? He was like, come and let me show you my goldfish. Like, this story has to be made up. Nobody does that. Come and check out my pet goldfish.
You've been to my house, Ritep. You know I'm on a
date. Little goldfish.
I don't lead with goldfish. I lead with mini horse. But you know,
that's
like,
what I'm saying. you have like big interesting animals. This is a goldfish you win at a carnival.
True.
Okay.
True.
Like who's like, "Oh, pretty funny. Come and see this goldfish that's probably going to be dead in 3 weeks anyways." You know what I'm saying? But dude, that picture is badass, regardless of
what kind of spider you think that is. Do you have any idea for us?
It's a wolf spider, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we saw a ton of those in the bayou in Louisiana.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I think I ate about 12 of them when we were looking for the woodpecker.
While airboating at 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Oh, yeah. That's a pretty funny story. That one's good.
It's great. And a couple of good looking peeps. Nice work.
Yeah, good for them.
They have children.
Now.
Nice job. Guys.
What?
It's time. It is time for the segment that roasters worldwide clamor for.
Battle Royale.
Wow.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a good one. I like this one.
Everybody's fired up tonight. It's good.
Wild Times Willie came up with this because he's obviously a pervert and a weird guy.
He has long hair. It's gross.
So here's what he came up with, and I think this is great. We've done a lot of intense biological ones. We did cereal, and people loved that. People wanted to hear about Fruit Fruit. All right, we've all heard and seen about furries. Of course. Yes. We've seen the furry convention they have in San Diego every year. We are aware that adult humans put on fuzzy costumes to make themselves look like plush animals and have sex in them at conventions.
It's true. You know this. This is a thing. All right. It's well known.
So.
Retep, why are you getting so red? Are you involved in this department? Like, your face has completely changed hue since Patrick brought this up.
I had no idea. Just like a furry battle royale is really piquing my interest.
But I really want everyone to try, and this is important to me. This is really important. So if you're one of the Brosners, I really want you. I know we always ask you to vote, but I really, really want you to vote on this one. I'm asking you nicely. Please vote on this. Because I really want to have to try hard, okay?
I like that.
So can we give away a prize on this one?
Let's.
What do you have?
Let's give away a good prize. How about a dope pair of brand new electric sunglasses from one of our sponsors, Electric. They're badass shades. I mean, you know, you're talking about $150, $250 pair of sunglasses.
What do they
do? You pick the style. I'll send them to you.
It's done.
What do they do? Yep, what do electric sunglasses do?
They're just badass. They make them for skiing, snowboarding. It's the brown ones I wear on every single expedition or my electric. Super, super good polarization. I use them for fishing. They're dope. I mean, that's a good prize.
All right, so here's what you do. You comment on iTunes. That's awesome. Thank you.
Or YouTube.
Comment on the YouTube, and you'll be eligible to win from one of Forrest's sponsors, the electric sunglasses. That's dope. Please
send you a shirt. All right. Why not?
So take it, and then here's the thing. For the three of us, whoever wins, the next time we're allowed to be in the same room gets to slap the other two guys in the face.
Ooh, on air.
Medium hard. That's fair.
But on the show.
I'm in on this.
Yeah,
right.
That's good.
All right, so this is big. There's a lot of stakes.
This is good.
You're going to a furry convention. You have to build your own costume from elements of three animals to get all the attention at the furry
elements
convention.
Elements of three. Okay. Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah. Gotcha.
It's not three days, three outfits. It's one outfit, elements of three animals that exist in the animal kingdom. Can't be a Sasquatch. Has to be something that exists currently. Okay. No dinosaurs, nothing that's extinct. You have to be the toast of the convention. And on the last night, Sunday evening, you have to win best costume.
Wow. This is a big
snake draft.
Yeah, snake draft style.
The hated snake draft. Who should go first? Forrest, you decide the order.
Yeah, you brought it to the table. Why don't you kick the tires, Papa P?
I'm going to take an element that I love from nature, and it is the length and exact size and shape of the anaconda's body. Okay?
Wow.
And what I'm going to do,
that's
exactly right.
Yeah.
Accidentally penis.
That's no, purposely penis. So I'm going to have a full length anaconda from the Amazon that is going to be the phallus of my costume, extending roughly 20 feet.
Just the phallus?
Yep. That's it.
Wow.
So you don't know anything else about my head or my body, just that I have a 20 foot anaconda penis with the full sized anaconda head at the end of it.
Just heading straight out of the center divide there.
These conventions are all about sex, so that's what I'm doing.
Wow, that's bold. Okay, I'll go next. I mean, let Peter think about it. Do some more Googling. What is an animal?
I'm not Googling, mate.
What is animal?
Animal, you son of a bitch.
Okay, wow, that's a hell of a play to get started. So I'm going to take the approach of, you know, these people are perverts. I'm sorry. If you're a Brosner and you go to these conventions, just accept it. You are a pervert. We're not judging you. It's 2020. You can be a pervert. Yeah. We're the ones making the game.
Yeah.
But I'm going to assume that many of these furry perverts have foot fetishes. You know, Patrick hit it right on the nose with like a big, you know, coming out of the gate with a big anaconda penis. You know, like I got a 20-foot dick. I get it, right? I'm going to go a little more subtle. I'm going to put on a nice big set of bare feet. Just big old cute bear mitts that I'm walking around on hands and feet, all fours, you know, big, talking this size, the claws coming off, just bear mitts, hands and feet. And I'm thinking that at least Like, if you're into furries, you've done everything sexually. There's nothing you haven't done at that point. Okay. Like, you've checked right. all the boxes. You have to have. So maybe the last one you checked was the foot fetish box, and I can just come in with my bear mitts and give you a little tickle and entice you a little bit.
They're cute.
Yeah.
I'm cute.
All right. Well, So you guys have picked some pretty standard animals. Will, if you want to pull up a picture of any of ours moving forward, this would be a good one. I will have the torso. And so basically from right below the head down to the dick.
The pelvic
bone. It will be
bone.
That sure. of a sea pig. Will, if you'd like to pull up a picture of a sea pig, it's a very, it has...
Sea
what?
Pig?
It nope. has several what look like elongated nipples on the belly.
I'm
so,
Googling this. So I'm Forrest, a biologist. I don't know what you're talking
Forrest
about.
Forrest is shaking his head like a dog when you make a strange sound that you've never made before.
It's a scotoplane, a sea
yes,
pig.
Yes, scotoplane. Yes. Okay, fair yes. enough. Yep.
So they have okay. what look like elongated nipples on the underside of its body.
I think it might be legs, sir.
And then several limbs that could be used. These could all be used in sexual acts. And, you know, this will be explained thoroughly to my sexual furry partners.
It's properly disgusting. What else are you going to have
next? I mean,
next?
It's a good pick, though. Like, it is properly disgusting. I'm not, like...
Like the color.
There's nothing sexually attractive about that, but... You know, there's a lot of appendages to suck on.
The collar's nice. Good call. Sure. The collar's very approachable.
Sure. Yeah.
So, what you got next? This is a snake draft, huh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that means...
So that means I go again. My face is going to be a very luscious, suckable set of lips on this animal. and it looks what? Exactly like me. My face and head is going to be that... Of the blobfish.
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. You had
good
to.
Good call, mate.
You had to do that.
Yeah. No other, I said suckable, no luscious lips.
So, just so... Okay, I'm going to wait till the end. Okay, Forrest, you're back up.
No, say. I want to...
Well, so far, Retep has a blobfish's face, which is on the YouTube
and
currently,
head.
And head,
yes.
yep. which yeah. is...
The eyes over here.
Generally considered one of the most revolting... animals in nature,
but just and then luscious the, lips. If you want to get sucked, baby, you get sucked by a.
That's a good point.
Get sucked.
Yeah, oh, that's man. Good.
You and I are taking very different approaches
yeah.
to this.
Yeah, Forrest is going very cute. Yeah. You're going all pink yeah. and fleshy and really revolting.
If you're into,
you
you're
might.
Into,
I mean, you might be the guy
acts.
That people want to sleep with, though. Like that's
you
a,
like it
that's
slippery.
That is, yeah, real slippery. Okay, so I've got these adorable bear mitts for those with a foot fetish. Now, from my understanding, and my understanding of furries is entirely based on South Park, but from my understanding of furries, it's again going for the cute thing. And so let's just look at Will Retep's blobfish face for a minute. Will, do me a favor, pull up the picture. Of a tarsier, because
ooh,
that's the head
cute.
Of the animal that I'm choosing to go on this body. So, right, we haven't discussed the body at all yet, but at this point in time, I've got the head of a tarsier, the hands of a bear. I'm stacking up to be one cute as fuck furry.
While we wait for Will to pull it up, what is a tarsier?
Oh, look at that thing. It's a tiny nocturnal primate that has the largest eye-to-head ratio of any animal in the world, and I think... You know, I think Will kind of picked a not super cute one, but they are, I would say they're about the cutest creatures ever. That's what I'm going for in the facial region.
All right.
So let me ask you this, you son of a fucking bitch. That's a slow loris, isn't it?
It's very close. The slow loris is very, very similar. So yeah, if that was your next pick, it's Gonzo.
I was going slow yep. loris because that essentially is a slow loris. I'm furious. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm
Good.
Utterly furious here.
Good.
Why? You were going to pick...
Yeah, because look how cute it is, man.
It's so cute. It's
He's
so
gonna
cute.
He's going to be the talk of the fucking thing.
Yep.
All right.
It's true.
So here's what I'm going to do. So Will, disregard the text I just sent you about slow loris. And look at my new text, Wild Times Willie. All right. So I have this massive phallus. And so now I have to counterbalance that. With cuteness, because otherwise it's just going to be like, who's this like guy who like goes to Kiss concerts and is just like, look at what I've got. So the anaconda is sort of this outlier from the rest of my costume.
Okay.
My entire head, including the big, beautiful ears, are going to be that of a fennec fox.
I knew when you said ears, I knew where you were going to.
Yeah,
that's,
baby.
God, that was, I was on the fence. That's nice. That's
yeah,
nice.
Fennec
very
fox.
Cute.
Will just pulled up a picture on the YouTube. I mean, come on, guys.
See, yeah. As far as an animal, yeah that might be nice. Cuter. God damn it.
It's, I mean, cuter. You guys are so within. We just talked about thinking outside of the box when it comes to life and science. Here you are, just picking.
Well,
the
hey, we still
animals.
Have the body to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, we still have the body to go.
So
don't write us off yet.
So you have a fennec fox with the most adorable face, head, ears I've ever seen. I now have to find a suitable body to go with that head and a 20-foot anaconda phallus.
Right. Correct.
Naturally, this is very obvious, the body that I shall don at said convention to be the belle of the ball will be the body of a manatee.
Oh, yeah. Very obvious.
It's round. It's approachable.
It's very approachable.
Yeah, it's very disjointed because now what you've done is you've gone the cute route and then you've mixed it with what I'm doing. It doesn't work when you go both ways. You have to commit one way or the other.
It works great.
It's just, it's disjointed.
No, because here's my thing. Cute head, first thing you see. Oh, who's that? Is that the new person?
Isn't this the body?
Is it someone with a banging bod?
Oh.
Then you look down at the body and you go, it's approachable. So I'm not turned off by that cute face because I think I'm cute enough for them because of this approachable bod. Then you look down and you see the phallus and you go, okay, they're ready to party.
Wow.
So that's it.
That's a real mullet haircut of a furry, you know?
Yes, like, it is.
Real business in the front, party in the back kind of costume.
All right, Forrest, what are you going to combine with your tarsier, beautiful head, big eyes, and your adorable feet and hands of a bear? What are you going to do?
Oh, man. So I'm still trying to keep it, you know, in that cute and cuddly realm. And I think in order to do that, but keep in mind, we still want to be different, right? If I go bare body, bare hands, I've just got a weird head.
It's
boring. So I'm going to go, it's boring. That's a snooze fest. But what isn't a snooze fest is to have the jacked body of the giant red kangaroo. You know, the red boxing kangaroo that people beat up. And you're like, look. I'm adorable. I got these mitts. I'm also like the jacked hot guy at the convention. Like, you don't not want to rub these muscles. So, Will, pull up. I know we're making you work fast on the spot here, WT, but that's my bod. Like, look at me. I'm also still kind of humanoid in a sense. So it's like, that's cool. But I have a tail, so you can pull on that. You know, there's a lot going on there.
Oh, yeah, you can pull on that. Yeah.
I'm concerned for those who are deciding who to vote for, that Forrest will look much like an alien with a humanoid, jacked, striated bod, and then the weird head and paws. That's very alien-y, sir.
It's very different.
Oh, that's
it's very
okay.
different. I mean, it's,
go for the palace.
He's
definitely
going to
get attention.
That's for sure.
Okay. So, Recep, what other pink, slimy animal?
A different question.
A flamingo leg?
Blobfish head and sea pig body with many nipples and limbs with which to feel with and be felt. the type of person I'm going for, I'm really getting into the mind of the furry crowd. And if they are into my blobfish face and my sea pig body, they are gonna want a nice set of ostrich feet on there.
Wow. They are.
Got some ostrich feet. So at the end of each of those little sea pig testicles, you just got these velociraptor claws. Is that how this shakes out? Or are you upright?
I'm upright.
You're upright. Two ostrich legs sticking out the bottom.
Correct.
With those things on the end.
Two of these fucking two-toed talons.
So you're just going to gut somebody. Like, you're just going to be mid-coitus with this pink thing and just...
I'll have a pedicure before I go. They'll
pink,
be nice and soft and descaled. But I'm just saying, if I'm going for a certain type
so
here...
So disgusting.
And I think that if they're into my blobfish head and my sea pig body, they're going to want a set.
You've just created the most disgusting creature anybody has ever thought of.
Also, out of the box, man.
Also, Forrest, note that he has no logic behind why they would want those feet. It's just
a
thing.
About?
It's just a thing.
Well, it's he's like these other disgusting things. Here's some disgusting feet.
Yeah. I've done extensive research into the furry community. I know what I'm talking about.
Okay. Oh, boy. All right. If you have enjoyed this battle royale, this is really important. We want you to win the electric sunglasses. Your pick. You pick the style. I'll get them sent out to you. Let us know. Yep. You got to vote. That's what you have to do. You have to let us know who won the furry convention. Whose furry would you cuddle up with, you know? Let us know.
Or want to have degenerate, disgusting sex.
Also, very important to note that Forrest will not be picking. He'll just be providing.
Correct.
So all of the comments will be put into a random pool and picked. So don't just vote for Forrest because you're like, he's going to pick me.
He doesn't
even know how to read the comments. He's very dumb.
I don't even know what a comment is. But whatever they are, leave one on iTunes. Along with a 5-star review, please, as well as on the YouTube channel. It really does help us. You know, subscribe, like send it to your friends if you're enjoying this podcast. We love this community, this Brosner community. We're enjoying doing the lives with you guys. The feedback we're getting from the pod, it's growing really quickly. So we enjoy you sharing that with your friends and family. And that's all I got.
Yeah, happy New Year, guys.
Videos. Hey. People are enjoying the daily vids. If you like one, send it to a friend.
This is one of my favorite podcasts we've ever done, just because I think we all got really fired up about different things.
Sure did.
And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the shit out of this.
It was a good one. Yeah.
The Wild Times Podcast.
2021 is looking up, guys. It's looking up.
Yeah, baby.
Yes.
Go ahead, Ritz.
WildTimesPodcast.com/info for all the links. WildTimesPodcast.com/merch for all of the merch. And be sure to vote. Comment on this video. I definitely win that pair of electric sunglasses and a shirt with our logo on it. Good night.
Love you guys.
Good night. Love you, Brosners.
But no, I meant you, Peter and Forrest.
Ooh.
Don't say it often enough.